Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Championship Roundtable podcast. You can find the show at Championship Pod on Twitter. I'm Louis Shackshaft, football writer, blogger and podcast host for you today.
Hi, I'm Jake. You can get me on Twitter at Jake Jappel with two N's, and I write for EPL Index.
Great to have you with us again, Jake, as ever. Sorry we didn't record last week. We had a few minor technical issues, but we're back on it this week. And first and foremost, as ever, we go straight into results roundup. So if you don't mind, Jake, taking us through the results from the weekend's fixtures.
Yeah, I'll do that. There was a 1-1 draw at the Badeski between Reading and Rotherham. Sheffield Wednesday beat Swansea 3-1. Stoke drew 1-1 with Aston Villa. Birmingham drew 2-2 with Blackburn. Brentford hammered Hull at home 5-1. Leeds got a late win against Bolton 2-1. Middlesbrough won 2-0 at home against QPR. Preston won 3-1 away from home against Millwall. Norwich came from behind to beat in-form Bristol City 3-2. Wigan got a late equaliser to draw against Ipswich, and Sheffield United beat West Brom in the late game.
Thank you for that, Jake. Obviously, quite a lot of fixtures for Saturday. More often than not, we don't particularly get a full fixture list. We're only waiting on the Nottingham Forest versus Derby fixture and the result in that one. So plenty of 3 o'clock kickoffs this Saturday. But are there any particular wins or surprises from this weekend, Jake, that stood out for you in particular?
Yeah, I think the Norwich game for me was a little bit of a surprise. Not that the Norwich won, I think they were favourites going into the game, but to score 3 goals against this Bristol City team, who haven't conceded many at all recently, got a really good defensive record, only conceding 33 in the whole season now, which is the second best in the top six behind only Middlesbrough, who are famed for their defence. For Norwich to get 3 goals in that game, and especially coming from behind twice, is really impressive, and I think it's a massive shot in the arm for their title challenge after their lost a couple of weeks ago. It's huge that they're back on track, top of the table, and that is huge for them. With only 12 games to go, it looks like they're definitely the favourite to finish in that top spot now. Sheffield United, for me, beating West Brom was a bit of a shock. I know we tipped West Brom a couple of weeks ago, and that's already looking like a bit of a long shot now. Still not over, there's still only 6 points at the top, but
yeah,
that was a huge game, and I think that it was always going to be likely that the winners of this one really push on and become favourites to secure a top two spot, and I think Sheffield United have done that now. Darren Moore made a few questionable comments after the game about how his team have run out of steam, or it was one game too far. I mean, there's another 12 to go, Darren, so that's a bit of an issue if you're already thinking like that, and if you're going to be in the playoffs, there's going to be a few more after that, so they're a little bit worried for West Brom fans. It's not too many other shocks. I saw Sheffield Wednesday winning 3-1 at home was a bit of a shock against Swansea after what they did to Brentford last week in the FA Cup, but it's one of those things that Swansea don't have a lot to play for. Maybe the FA Cup took a lot out of them. I know they've got a thin squad down there, so yeah, it's a bit of a surprise, but a huge win for Sheffield Wednesday. Now you've got four teams clumped on 44 points. Swansea, Hull, Blackburn and Sheffield Wednesday, and there's three of those we've talked about for playoffs this season. It's interesting that they're sort of secured right in the middle of the table, those four. That's a good win for Sheffield Wednesday, and I think there's no chance of relegation now, and maybe over the next 13 games, they've got 13 left to go, that Steve Bruce can build something for next season, which I think has got to be the hope.
Yeah, hopefully. It's interesting you mentioned that game, because I wasn't going to, actually, but it was nice to finally get a win under Bruce. Obviously, he's unbeaten as a manager yet at Wednesday, but we've come off 3 draws in a row, all off teams in the bottom half, and probably should have been winning a couple of those games. To actually run out 3-1 winners and be 3-0 up at half-time, you'll be pleased to hear, Jake, as a Newcastle fan, that Ahrens and Lazar put in fantastic performances. And if not, they were probably, you know, Ahrens in particular was probably the man of the match on that day. But yeah, some great performances all around. The only other game that I'd like to pick out is the Brentford game, obviously putting 5 past Hull City. Ben Rama with a hat-trick in that game, which we'll probably come on to when we talk about standout players. But Brentford obviously having a hit-and-miss season where they were doing fantastically well at the beginning before Dean Smith left for Aston Villa. Then obviously they went on a bit of a slump. They're still in the bottom half of the table. But then to put 5 past Hull City, who have been one of the form teams since Christmas, was a fantastic result. And I still think that Brentford are one of the best footballing sides in division, despite them being 16th in the table. They're really one of them sides, you know, you're unsure what they're going to do on the day, but they've won 5 out of the last 6 games. So credit to them. But yeah, the other ones for me, Sheffield United beating West Brom and Norwich City coming from behind at one stage also when they were 2-1 down to beat Bristol City 3-2 was a huge result. And McLean's finding obviously his goal-scoring boots at the right time, and he managed to score a brace. Are there any standout players then from this weekend that spring to mind, Jake, for you in particular?
Yeah, there's a few. I thought Paul Gallagher for Preston had a very good game, getting 2 assists in a 3-1 win away to Millwall, moving them 6 points off the playoffs. I know they've played 34 games, which puts them at a bit of a disadvantage, but a few months ago, Louis, I was talking about them for playoffs, and they are starting to surge up towards those spots. I think there's not enough games left for them to do it, but I think they're definitely going to finish higher than they currently are, and they're going to have room to get into the next season. I think from the Sheffield United game, Kieran Dow obviously got the winning goal. I thought he was very, very good, and he showed the form that he displayed last year at Nottingham Forest. I said when he signed, I thought he was a good signing, and it, you know, delivering a key performance like that in a massive game showed. And then you can go to the Norwich and Bristol City game for a number of good performances on both teams. I thought Jamie Patterson and Callum O'Dowda were very good for Bristol City. And then obviously you had Hernandez, I thought, had a good game. And obviously McLean getting 2 goals. You know, he deserves credit for that as well. And Godfrey at the back getting a goal. Yeah, so there's lots of good performances. But for me, the big ones were Kieran Dow and Paul Gallagher.
Yeah, good shouts, because you've named a couple of players that I haven't listed. So for me, again, Shea Adams, he keeps popping up with the goals, doesn't he? Managed to score a brace against Blackburn, and for me, I can only imagine that Shea Adams, I was surprised maybe he didn't leave in January. Maybe a few clubs are still going to have their eye on him in the summer, and he may not be at Birmingham later this year. But yeah, he keeps popping up with the goals. Obviously, I've mentioned Ben Rama with the hat-trick already, but he's, as we know, is on his day one of the best players in this division, and he scored a couple of blinding goals also to go with the others. You've mentioned McLean, who scored a brace. I'm going to mention Adam Reach. Obviously, he's not scored, you know, for a while since scoring those worldies against West Brom and Leeds, which seemed like an ages ago. So for him to score a brace and, yeah, find his goal-scoring boots, because since Bruce come in, he's played in a couple of positions, and, you know, he's one of those players who kind of just gets on with it. And for him to bag a brace, he's managed to get a few assists recently, but to get him back on the score sheet can only be good for us. And then I'm going to mention a clean sheet for Dean Henderson. Like you've already talked about Dowell at Sheffield United, but I'm going to mention Henderson, who, like I say, we always talk about West Brom, how many goals are scored, the attacking threats. And I think for Sheffield United to keep a clean sheet in that game, which I predicted a West Brom win, then it's all credit again to the defence and their display. So I'm going to pick out the goalkeeper Henderson there, and all credit to them, because Sheffield United just keep, you know, week by week pulling out these results, and yeah, won 3 in a row now and sit second in the league. So yes, they've got a fantastic opportunity in 12 games ahead of them, and it's for players like Dowell and Sharp and Henderson that are keeping them up there with this fantastic spine that they've got in the team. But moving on to the topics proper, Jake, I know we missed, obviously, recording last week, and McLean at Norwich was the most guilty of missing a penalty at Norwich recently. What is with Norwich City and the penalty curse? What do you think that is all about? Because they've missed 6 out of 7 penalties this season. Is there anything you can pinpoint or put your finger on that you think there may be an issue with?
It's difficult. I don't think there's a reason for it. I mean, the obvious one is that they don't have anybody that's good at penalties in their team, but even that seems a bit of a stretch. I just think it's a bit of bad luck and just a bit... Just one of these things that happened, you know. Some players will go through scoring 15, 20 penalties in a row, but then there are others that will, you know, teams that will miss that many. It is a complete lottery. I know it's a bit of a cliche, but it is. I don't think it's anything to worry about for Norwich. The only thing where it could potentially become a problem is if they did end up in the playoffs and had to, you know, go down that route as a way of deciding a tie, but the way things are going, I don't think they're going to have to rely on penalties to get anywhere at the end of the season, so I wouldn't be too concerned in that regard. But it just seems, it's a bit of a weird one, isn't it? I can't put my finger on if there's a reason for it, apart from not having a quality player to take them, because, you know, if you look down the rest of the league, you could probably pick your penalty taker out of a lot of those teams, but I don't think you can. Norwich, there's nobody obvious, which is odd because there's a lot of good technical players there, so you'd think a lot of them would be able to take a penalty kick, but apparently not.
Yeah, exactly, and that's what I thought. You know, like I said, the players that they've got who've proved themselves, and, you know, they're gifted in many areas of the field, and particularly in attack, you'd have thought that, you know, taking a penalty would not be an issue, and like you say, it might be just an element of bad luck. But one thing that I did pick out, and see what you think about this, but the penalties that they have missed in the league this season, Jordan Rhodes has missed one, Vrančić, Pukki, Stieperman, McLean. Do you think it's a bit of a strange decision that 5 penalty takers have all missed a penalty instead of sticking with particularly one player? Like Pukki, for example, or Vrančić, you know, should he have been taking, or one of those players been taking all 5 penalties rather than rotating the penalty taker based on someone else missing that previously? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a case for it. I think you have your penalty taker and you stick with them. I can't remember who it was. I think it might have been Louis van Gaal at Man United. He used to have a policy where he'd have a penalty taker until they missed, and then he'd switch it to the next one. I don't know if that sort of thing's been employed at Norwich, because they seem to be changed them every single time, but it's that lack of consistency, I think. And obviously the people taking it up now, they're 5th, 6th choice, aren't they, according to their manager?
Yeah.
So that doesn't really give them a lot of confidence.
Yeah.
I think they should probably stick with one. Pukki would probably be the one for me. He's used to scoring goals, and he can, as a striker, you know, you have that ability to put misses behind you. They don't affect you as much as they do other players, because you've got to be alert for your next chance. And Pukki sort of strikes me as the type of player that doesn't care about missing chances, and I think that's one of the reasons he's been so effective this season. So yeah, for me, he should be taking the penalties, but obviously the coaching staff see what goes on every day in training, and maybe there's reasons for the constant change. I'm not sure. It's difficult, but yeah, I think Farke would stick with one, really.
Yeah, I've done a bit of research as well. So just to put it into perspective, obviously Norwich have missed quite a few penalties this season, but top of the penalty scoring list is actually West Brom. They've scored 6 penalties this season. Norwich have only scored the one, having missed obviously quite a handful more. And bottom of the league is Bolton. They're the only team not to have scored a penalty this season, with 0, obviously. So it just shows, if Norwich had have converted maybe 4 or 5 penalties more so in the league this season, they may have had, obviously, an advantage. I know there's been a couple of games when they've been 3 and 4 nil up and missed penalties. But obviously Norwich may have, you know, in this case of converting penalties, may have had 3 points more on the board. But it's also interesting that Norwich City, like I say, have only scored 1 penalty. But when you look at goals from open play, Norwich sit quite comfortably at the top of that league, which is they've managed to score 56 from 68 goals this season from open play, and second on that list is actually West Brom, which is no surprise. But West Brom have only scored 42 goals from open play this season. So Norwich have got an advantage of 14 more goals have scored than West Brom in second from open play this season, which comes as quite a surprise. Does that shock you as well, Jake?
Yeah, I think that does shock me, actually, to be honest. The conversations we have about West Brom being such a good attacking team, yeah, that has surprised me. I'm not going to...
Yeah, it did me. As soon as I pulled up the research and had a look at that, I was very much surprised that they had scored so many goals from open play. But at the same time, I think they sit 17th in the league for goals from set pieces, Norwich. So obviously, they're struggling in that area, where Aston Villa first, and they've scored about 19-20 goals this season.
The thing I would say about set piece goals as well, I think it's not to pick out Farke, which is going to sound like I am, but set pieces are something that don't change from game to game, don't change from opposition to opposition. They're something you can practice and drill and get good at, and they're probably quite underutilized at the very top of the game because they're seen as unfashionable. But yeah, you can have a good, attractive team that plays good football and be good at set pieces. There's no reason why only boring teams can be seen as being good at set pieces. Because Aston Villa, obviously, are one that we say play good football, but they're well drilled and they get a lot of goals from set pieces. And I know the top coaches look at set pieces as a real avenue for goals, because you get an extra, 10% on your goal tally if you become good at set pieces. So
exactly,
that's a surprising one, because I would have thought somebody that's come up through the German system, who knows the importance of utilizing every single avenue. I think it's surprising, that one, and I think something that is going to be that could be improved on over the coming season, especially if they go up to the Premier League. That is definitely an area they're going to have to improve on.
Yeah, definitely. It is interesting looking at those stats, yeah. And yeah, like I say, I was just completely surprised by Norwich's 56 goals from open play this season. And, everyone else in the league is hell of a long way behind, even West Brom. But yeah, if they were to improve, then obviously set pieces is something that they can focus on. But moving on to the next topic, Jake, there's possible sanctions for Birmingham this week for breaking EFL spending rules. Now, the hearing this week might see Birmingham encounter a 12-point deduction, but I wondered what your thoughts are on this process and the possible conclusion of the sanction, and what you think potentially could happen to Birmingham if they do go again into an embargo, or they do have a point deduction, and is a point deduction fair?
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? I think we knew this was coming for a long time with Birmingham, the way they spent recklessly under Harry Redknapp especially. I know they're currently under a transfer ban, are they not already?
Yes, so and as well, they made it very much worse by signing Pedersen when they were in the embargo, if you remember. So they bought Pedersen for £2 million, I believe it was, in total, during the embargo. And obviously, they've technically therefore broken the EFL spending rules even further by doing so. So I'm guessing the punishment, even though 12 points seems harsh and going into a further embargo for maybe another year or two, maybe by breaking the rules twice, then maybe it is a sufficient punishment. I don't know what you think about that.
I think so. I think they need to be punished for obviously breaking rules, because they're there for a reason, and if they're not made examples of, other teams that could have followed suit, and I don't think that's quite fair. So would the points deduction be this season, or would it be next?
No, it'd be this season. So there's a possible 12-point deduction, which straight away would take them down, let's say, they're on 47 points now.
That would take them down with Wigan, wouldn't it? On 35.
Yes, to 35 points. So even though Birmingham, you wouldn't expect to be relegated even with a points deduction, it really puts them in the mix where in the unlikely event that Reading and Rotherham start picking up points, that, yes, they could end up in the mix of a relegation fight, which would seem strange. But at the same time, like you said, if they are breaking rules and continue to do so, which they obviously did, then, maybe 12 points is sufficient. You know,
the thing with the EFL spending rules, that where they're at, I think there is room to break them. But if you do that, you're going to have to make, you know, down the certain you're going to go up, because that's I think Brighton would have been in line for a massive, you know, massive fine and transfer embargo, because if they hadn't gone up that season, they did. So, you know, if you're going to do it, you have to make sure you do it well enough that you get out of the league. And
like Wolves did, didn't they? Yeah. They have spent loads of money and obviously managed to flew into first position and went straight up. I'm very intrigued to see what's going to happen to Birmingham, because my club is on the borderline of being a culprit of breaking EFL spending rules. And although I'm not a fan of the exact rules that are in place, you know, obviously there's parachute payments what come down from, you know, the Premier League relegation, which I don't agree with, because obviously players, you know, teams like Sheffield Wednesday, who I support, and your Derbies, and you know, your Nottingham Forest, teams like that who've, you know, been in this division what seems to be ages now, obviously don't have an advantage compared to those teams that have been relegated. And at the same time, if you've got a chairman who's got plenty of money and is willing to spend it, yes, put a cap on it, but I think £36 million over a three-year period, it isn't a lot of money at all to be making losses, particularly in this day and age. Maybe if it was double that amount, £72 million, then it'd probably seem fair, but they're obviously in place for a reason. But yeah, whatever the outcome of the Birmingham City sanction, if you like, if whenever that happens in this next week or so, I'm intrigued to see what punishment they do get, because there's the likes of Sheffield Wednesday and Aston Villa, maybe even, who are going to be maybe not punished as severe, but punished again if they, you know, have spent too much in PNS. So we will see, I guess, Jake. Yeah, it's going to be really intriguing to see whether Birmingham get the 12-point ban, and you know, a lot of this season would be in vain based on their eighth at the minute. You know, they've still got the opportunity for the playoffs, but even a 6-point deduction would just see them obviously swoop to halfway, and there'd be no, you know, light at the end of the tunnel based on this season. And if they go into an embargo for the, you know, next season again, then maybe Birmingham, you know, we've touched on Shea Adams and players like that, Lukas Jukovic, then maybe it's time, that would be time for them to go, and it'd be the right moment for them to move on. I don't know what you think about such as Adams and Jukovic. If they were to go into a ban, what do you think, they'd move on?
Well, it's difficult, isn't it? Because on the one hand, the players most likely would want to go to a club that would be progressing and not one that is standing still like Birmingham would be. But on the other hand, can Birmingham afford to just sell players if they can't bring anybody in? It's one of those.
Yeah.
Rock and a hard place sort of situation. So it'll be interesting to see how it played out. I think Adams especially would push to go, but
yeah, I do.
But that, but if they did, say, get a two-window transfer embargo, a points deduction, to sell your best player on the top of that as well, it's not really a good PR thing to do. So yeah, it's going to be a very interesting situation to see how it plays out, and I think the punishments are going to be huge in determining how, you know, the future of Birmingham City, which is it's sad for the fans, because it's no, you know, that no, they've done nothing wrong, but you know, it's just if your club are going to break the rules, you're gonna get the punishments, and they're now going to get those, and it's sad, because I think they're building something good under Gary Monk, but if they've done it illegally, then you know, it's difficult to feel a lot of sympathy.
Yeah, exactly. I think you've hit the nail on the head there. I just hope that, you know, whatever the sanctions are, the EFL remain consistent. I don't like, you know, one club breaks one rule, another club breaks the same rule, but there's different punishments for different clubs, if that makes sense. And while we're on the topic, actually, I'm gonna just bring up, if you don't mind, Jake, the Leeds Spygate affair, which saw Leeds fined £200,000. Again, that's when I'm talking about rules and the punishments that put in place. £200,000 seemed a hell of a lot to me. I know in monetary terms for a football club, it's not a lot of money at all. But when you compare punishments for clubs that have, you know, fans have been fighting, or there's, you know, racism chants, or et cetera, that goes on, and typically a club's fined between £10,000 and £25,000. It just seemed, you know, 10 times that amount that Leeds have been punished for something that, yes, was immoral, yes, unethical, but actually wasn't illegal. What do you think about that situation?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's difficult to compare the two, really. I think the Spygate thing was very much a new thing in English football. We hadn't seen anything like it, so we didn't have much of a previous example to go on, a precedent, so to speak, to enforce the laws against it. And because it was, you know, so unique, it was difficult to give them a huge punishment for that, because it could be just a misunderstanding. And although I'm sure it wasn't, I'm sure Bielsa knew he was doing something wrong. You know, it's difficult to prove that, and as such, they couldn't go big on the punishment. I think that would have been the case of any club. I don't think just because it's Leeds United, they got a lesser punishment. Whereas this, financial rules have been broken before in England. They'll be broken again. There's been punishments before. There's been transfer bugs. There's been points deductions. It's not a new thing. So you've got to stick with what's happened in the past,
yeah.
and what is the letter of the law and the precedent and apply it here. You can't change that. I think it's difficult to compare the two for me. And I know that some will be disappointed Leeds didn't get a bigger punishment, but I just don't think it really warranted one.
No, I agree to an extent. I think, you know, a slap on the wrist, don't do it again kind of thing. And maybe, I understand there's a fine in place, but £200,000, like I say, compared to some other things that go on in this world, and there's a lot lesser fine, then I thought it was hefty in that regard. But other people may disagree. But yes, it's going to be a very interesting week for Birmingham City, so we will see what the consequences are there. But moving on to the next topic, Jake. As ever, they do supercomputer predictions for the final league standings. They do it for the Premier League. They do it, obviously, in League One, League Two. But we've had a look at the Championship ones. And the supercomputer, even though they're generally wrong come the end of the season, because it's the Championship, anything can happen. You know, take West Brom losing to Sheffield United recently. I'd have had that as a home win or a draw all day long. And maybe the supercomputer did also. But the final league standings say that Norwich are going to finish first on 92 points, with West Brom in second on 87, which we'll find interesting. And then your playoff spots then belong to Sheffield United in third on 84, Leeds on 83, Middlesbrough on 81, and then Bristol City. Interesting to see them taking the final playoff spot, according to the supercomputer, on 76 points. And down at the bottom, actually, there's no movement. The only thing which may seem surprising is the lack of points that the supercomputer's predicted, which is Rotherham to go down in 22nd on 36 points, Bolton then on 30, and Ipswich rock bottom on 27. What's your thoughts on those predictions by the so-called supercomputer, Jake?
Yeah, I think it's difficult to really buy into, put any faith in those predictions. Like, what does the supercomputer base it on? Results?
Mm.
It's interesting. There's no thing on that, and I think the thing with football, there's so many human qualities and there's so much, you know, human error and pressure and momentum and things that go into the running that just can't be, you know, brought about by numbers. Yeah, I wouldn't say too much. I think that it's very much a case of the supercomputer is predicted pretty much exactly the same, hasn't it? So it's not...
Thereabouts, there's a bit of movement in the top six. Obviously, it's got West Brom to finish second. I don't know whether it obviously takes in fixtures for the remainder of the season. I don't know if it considers goals for or goals against or goal difference or home form or away form. It must predict everything under that umbrella that we've just discussed. But it's like you say, it can't predict human error. You know, sendings off, injuries, all these kinds of things. So for it to predict, like I say, Norwich to finish top, then, you know, most people in the country could probably do that. You know, they're sat top now and, you know, one of the form teams in the league and have been all season. And then for the bottom, I think, you know, someone who doesn't even know about football could probably predict Rotherham, Bolton and Ipswich to come in the bottom three. There's only probably, you could make a case for Reading falling in there. But yeah, it is a strange one when I see the supercomputer predictions, because it actually, I find it intriguing. I always want to look and think, you know what, I'm going to take a look and see where, you know, my club's going to finish. You know, who it does think will finish the top two. But based on recent years, I think that it's turned out to be a load of rubbish, if I'm honest, Jake. Do you? Well,
yeah, I do. And I think I've got another sort of predicted probabilities table in front of me that I'd put a lot more faith into. I'm sure a lot of people know Ben Mayhew on Twitter. He does a lot of experimental expected goal stuff, which is, you know, becoming more and more into the mainstream in the UK, seen on Match of the Day and things like that. And he has some sort of probabilities based on the expected goals model, so that is quality of chances created. And he uses that to base, you know, what results will be and the likelihood and things like that. And his current probabilities are Leeds top of the table with about a 68% chance of top two, Norwich in second with about a 61% chance of top two, and then you have Sheffield United, who've got just over a 50% chance of top two, and then you go down to West Brom, Middlesbrough, and Derby being the third one into the playoffs, the fourth one into the playoffs, just ahead of Bristol City, and there's about a couple of percent in it in that one. And then in the bottom three, he's got Ipswich with, I'd say, a 99% chance of going down, which is, they're pretty much gone. Bolton got about a 9% chance of staying up. It's not a lot. And then he's got Reading third bottom.
Right, okay.
Just below, and then Rotherham just above. So I think that one, still a lot of problems with that one. Expected goals, I know there's a lot of criticism of it, but I'd put more faith in that than I would in a supercomputer, because at least you know what's going into those predictions and those probabilities.
Yeah, it's like you say, you can understand that more. It's just interesting that the supercomputers predicted Leeds to finish fourth, yet experimental 361 Ben Mayo on Twitter's predicted Leeds to finish top based on that probability. So yeah, it does kind of prove that, you know, just based on predictions, it's just luck of the draw, I'm guessing. It's like just putting, you know, a pound on an accumulator at the weekend, and it's just a case of having a bit of luck on the day, and it's similar to that. So yes, we'll see, you know, we'll have to wait till 46 games and we'll see come the end of the season which comes the closest, but for me, yes, I'm still predicting Norwich and West Brom to finish top two. So yeah, different predictions all around from computers and human beings this time, but that takes us nicely into previews and predictions, Jake. So the first game we're going to touch on, huge game on Friday night, 7:45 kickoff, is Leeds United at home to West Bromwich Albion. What's your preview and prediction for that game?
Yeah, this is huge, isn't it? One of two or three big games this weekend, actually, for me. And I think it's... See, before this weekend, I would have said West Brom. But they didn't really impress me against Sheffield Wednesday. Sheffield United, sorry. Second time I've done that in this podcast. I do apologise, Louis.
but yeah,
I think it's going to be... I think it's going to be a draw, just because I haven't seen enough from Leeds recently to really warrant predicting them to win. But I'd say they're the more likely winners for me, because I think Darren Moore's comments were very worrying about them sort of, you know, already seeming to have run out of gas. You know, used to Premier League seasons, these West Brom players, you know, normally they don't have another four games to play. They don't have that this time. So it could be that they're not quite up to the fitness levels of the Championship, which would be a surprise, but, you know, it could be the case. So for me, I'm going to go for a draw, but if you'd have to push me either way, I'd go Leeds. Well, I'll say 1-1 draw on this one.
Yeah, I'm going to sit on the fence as well, because it's such a tough one to predict. Leeds have only lost 3 games at home all season, whereas West Brom have got the best away record in the league. They've only lost 4 on the road, but they have won 10. So for this reason, I think it could be end-to-end. It could be a really good game. I'm going to predict a 2-2 draw, and I'm going to say the same as you, actually, Jake. If I was pushed, I would go Leeds, just because, obviously, West Brom losing against Sheffield United. I think, you know, Leeds have got the better form and they will have the home advantage. But, yes, if I were putting money on it, I would go 2-2 in this one. And then into Saturday, we've got a game at the bottom end of the table. Both teams need to win. 3 o'clock kickoff, Ipswich versus Reading. What's your preview and prediction for that?
Yeah, it's another difficult one to predict for me. Reading, I think they've shown good signs under Jose Gomez. I think Oliveira was a good sign. I think Martinez, we've spoken about him on the podcast before, I think he was a good sign. And it's slightly surprised they didn't beat Rotherham at the weekend, to be honest. I thought that was one that they'd get the win. But Rotherham have picked up 5 draws in the spin, just seem to be very good at just getting point after point after point. And they're probably hoping that that's enough to keep them up with Reading dropping points elsewhere. Ipswich has shown a bit of form as well. 3 draws in the spin. It's still a lot of draws going on at the bottom of the table at the moment, to be honest. Reading has got 4 draws in their last 6. I think I might surprise you, Louis. I think I might go for an Ipswich win. I don't know why. I don't know why I'm going for that. I have no reason, but I'm just going to...
They've got to win sometime, haven't they?
I just think it's a weird one. I think they might do it, you know. I think they're going to win at home and take them up to 24 points, 6 off Reading. Not impossible. I think they're going to win. They have absolutely no idea why. I think they were good signs at the weekend against Wigan. Probably should have won that game. But, I know, did they have 10 men? I think they did, didn't they? They went down to Ipswich.
They went down to
10 men. So, you know, to nearly get 3 points, you know, to go 1-0 up and nearly hold on for the 3 points, only conceding an injury time of 10 men is quite a feat, even if it was only against Wigan.
He got sent off after about 30 minutes. I
think that was a good fighting spirit shown by Ipswich in that one and nearly holding on. I know it would have been a disappointment, but it's definitely somewhere to build on. And I think they're going to beat Reading. They have that. I quite like Reading under Gomez as well. I think they've had good signs, but yeah, I think Ipswich are going to win. I just don't think Reading have got enough goals in them at the moment, and I think Ipswich are going to nick one here. I'm going to go for an Ipswich win.
Fair enough. I'm going to get straight to the point, and I'm just going to predict a 0-0 draw, to be honest, because looking at the table, if you take the bottom 6 right from Wigan down to Ipswich, they've only won between Wigan, Millwall, Reading, Rotherham, Bolton, Ipswich, they've only won 4 games between them in the last 6 games combined. So 36 games, there's only been 4 victories, but there's been 23 draws. And it's like you say, the likes of Rotherham who've just drawn 5 in a row. Reading have drawn 4 of the last 6. Wall have drawn 3 of the last 6. So have Wigan. Ipswich have drawn the last 3. So for that reason, yes, there's no other reason for me to not predict a draw. So yeah, I'm just going to say 0-0. Or, like, as we know, that there's not many goals between them. So it could be 1-1. But for that reason, I'm just going to say a point apiece. And I think that Ipswich are just, I think they're down and out already and buried. And Reading, I still think they'll scrape 21st just above Rotherham, but that could go down to the last game of the season. And it's games like this where they need to be at least drawing. So, yeah, I'm just going to stick with a sit on the fence again a little bit and predict a nil-nil draw. And then the other game, a big game as well, is 3 o'clock kickoff, Aston Villa versus Derby. What's your thoughts on that one? Both potentially, obviously Derby more so, pushing for the playoffs, but Villa with still a huge opportunity if they win this one.
This one's difficult to predict purely because Derby have yet to play this weekend, so we don't know how that's going to go. But yeah, Aston Villa still can't win games.
Mm.
They just can't win matches, which is very odd. So yeah, I'm going to go for a draw in this one. I hate to, but I think it's going to be a good draw. I think it's going to be a 2-2. I think it'll be an entertaining one, but I think it'll be a draw.
Fair enough. I'm going to go with a Derby win, actually. I'm going to go with an away win in this one, and it's simply because, like you've just said, Villa are still playing some decent football. They're capable of scoring a lot of goals, but they've still not won in 5 league games now, losing 2 of those. Whereas Derby, yes, they can be inconsistent, but they've still got a bit of ruthlessness about them, and they can get victories. I think they've just got that bit of added quality when they need to, even though it's going to be difficult at Villa Park, but I think they can still go and get that win. So I'm going to think there's quite a few goals going to be scored, I believe, but I'm going to predict 2-1 to Derby in this one. But unfortunately, Jake, with that, we're out of time. If you'd like to tell our listeners where they can find you, now would be a good time.
Yeah, you can obviously get the show in the normal places. You can get the Premier League show as well if you want to check that one out. It's quite a good one this week. I was on it, so you might want to avoid it in that sense. But no, you can get me on Twitter at Jake Jackman with 2 N's if anything I've said is wrong, because I'm sure some of it was, and I'm quite happy to be told that. So yeah, hit me up there.
Yeah, I might do it when we've finished recording. I'll say where you went wrong, Jake. Don't worry about that. And I've been your host, at Louis Shackshaft on Twitter. Remember to follow the show at Championship Pod, where we post each show to our pin tweet. Please subscribe, like, and retweet the show. We want to thank you all for listening, and we will catch you next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.